Distilled is a production of Chemical Processing. Chemical Processing focuses on serving engineers, designing, and operating plants in the chemical industry.
Welcome to the Solution Spotlight edition of our Chemical Processing Distilled podcast. Solution Spotlight, delving deeper into a topic from an industry perspective. I'm Tracy Purdom, Editor-in-Chief of Chemical Processing, and joining me on this episode is Alec O'Keefe, Regional Product Lead and Coriolis Meter Product Specialist at Krona. Alec hails from Western Massachusetts, where he attended the University of Massachusetts Amherst and received his degree in mechanical engineering. After graduation, Alec joined Krona, where he has worked for the past 10 years. An avid Boston sports fan and golfer, Alec now resides in Charleston, South Carolina. A little bit more about Krona. The company has been serving the chemical industry since it was founded in 1921 in Duisburg, Germany. Over a century later, it is now a global manufacturer and provider of instrumentation, measurement solutions, and services for worldwide process industries. Krona Incorporated, based in Beverly, Massachusetts, has U.S. manufacturing, distribution, sales, support, and engineering resources that serve the U.S., Canada, Mexico, Central America, and Caribbean industrial markets through an extensive network of channel partners. Thanks for joining me today, Alec. And I guess once a Boston fan, always a Boston fan, right?
Yeah, thanks so much for having me today, Tracy. Yes, Boston to the core. You can take the guy out of Massachusetts, but you can't take the Massachusetts out of the guy.
But you've gone down to South Carolina and there's better golfing there. So
it's always much trade-off. And much better weather. Yes. I get pictures from my family of the 12 inches of snow and I'm sitting outside in 70 degree weather and I don't miss it too much. But
Well, today we're going to talk about best practices for selecting and sizing a Coriolis mass flow meter. And prepping for this podcast, I wanted to get my head around what Coriolis means. Coriolis is an effect whereby a mass moving in a rotating system experiences a force acting perpendicular to the direction of motion to the axis of rotation. With that definition stated, are all Coriolis meters alike?
Certainly not, but you did hit that on the head in terms of what Coriolis meters are and their general principle of operation. But there are tons of different flavors of Coriolis meters, and there's certainly a variety of manufacturers, and different manufacturers have different design priorities and therefore make different design choices. So there's a large variety in the market, which is a very good thing for users. That means that there's always a multitude of options out there for any application, which is almost necessary when you think about Coriolis meters are so wildly versatile in the applications that they can handle. So it benefits everyone that there's also a huge variety of meters that are out there for every application. There's always a couple options.
Now, you talk about the versatility and the benefits. What benefits do Coriolis meters offer and why does it matter?
Yeah. So first and foremost, and what you may also know of, another name you may know Coriolis meters by is mass meters. That in and of itself is a huge benefit. If you look at the flow metering landscape, if such a thing exists, a majority of the flow meters out there are really measuring a flow velocity. And there's a few different ways that they may do that. And then with the flow velocity, you can make some assumptions and do some calculations that are generally very good these days. I don't mean to infer or imply that volumetric flow meters aren't as good or don't have their place. They most certainly do. But when you're dealing with things like chemical reactions that are typically mass-based, if you can cut out some of those calculations and assumptions and your primary measurement is mass flow, right? Mass is conserved, volume is not conserved. So you can have changes in temperature and pressure that may introduce unexpected errors or errors that you may not be always accounting for perfectly. So one of the main benefits of Coriolis meters is that they directly measure mass flow. But that's not all that they measure. There are multivariable meters. So you get a live mass flow. You also get an inline density measurement, an independent inline density measurement, which is not super easy to do. Nobody wants to pull samples or have nuclear sources involved that you may also have to do if you wanted a true density measurement. So they're multivariable. You get mass flow, you get density. You also get temperature measured directly from the meter. So with one installation point, you get a variety of very useful and also very accurate measurements. But even if you kind of, that's a little bit surface level. If you dig a bit deeper than that and you look at, and I would, to make a distinction, I generally refer to those measurements that I just mentioned, right? Your mass flow, your density, your temperature. You can get volume flow from a Coriolis meter. That's just mass flow divided by density. I would refer to all of those as kind of front end measurements, right? If you are looking for a Coriolis meter, those are generally, that's why you're looking for it, right? Is one or more of those front end measurements. But if you dig a bit deeper beneath the surface, there's these kind of back end measurements looking at things like, hey, well, what's my tube frequency doing? What is my drive level or drive gain doing? What are my sensor amplitudes? Especially if you're able to look at those over time, you can get a really deep, and you know what you're looking at, right? And manufacturers are always there to help you kind of decipher what those measurements might be telling you. But they can tell you a heck of a lot about what's really going on inside your process. So there's a lot of benefits to using a Coriolis flow meter in really any application.
What about, you kind of alluded to it, but I'm curious about how Coriolis meters handle different types of fluids, corrosive, multiphase. Can we talk a little bit about that and what considerations should be taken into account when selecting a meter for a specific fluid?
Absolutely. As I mentioned, right, they can handle just about everything. And when you're dealing with some of these more difficult applications, I would say, I mean, if you've got something that's close to water, well, that's easy. But once you start to get into things that are very corrosive, aggressive fluids that you have to be super careful with your wetted parts, or things that are very viscous or maybe non-Newtonian, or abrasive is another one, along with multiphase that you mentioned. You just have to be a bit more mindful with the design and manufacturer, honestly, that you may lean towards when you're looking at an application like that. And it kind of falls upon us collectively as both the users and the manufacturers of these to take these into account, right? So if you have something that's corrosive, and we know that, hey, we can't use stainless steel here. Sometimes we can't even use a more exotic metal like Hastelloy here. So different manufacturers may have different wetted parts, and that's certainly something we want to be extra careful with when we're selecting a Coriolis meter for an application, because generally the tubes of a Coriolis meter are rather thin. So we need to be very careful with corrosion rates in some of these more aggressive chemical applications. So that first and foremost, and that a lot of times kind of takes the driver's seat when you're selecting a Coriolis meter is, hey, well, I know I need to use a tantalum here, for example. Well, that whittles down your options pretty quick. It's like a game of guess who almost, where you ask this one pointed question, then all of a sudden, you know, three quarters of your board gets knocked down. And you're like, well, I guess these are the options that I'm left with. So that's very much an important concern when we're looking at an application, trying to select the best meter, right? Which is always what we're all looking for, is the best meter for an application. And then when you look at things like high viscosity fluids or something that may be non-Newtonian, those are always a bit of a curveball. That'll really steer you in terms of the meter size that you use and also the tube design, right? Different tube geometries that are, again, back to an earlier comment I made, right? Different manufacturers have different tube shapes, sizes, designs. That can steer you in a direction, because really what you battle a lot, sizing the Coriolis meter is a balancing act, where you're trying to balance these. Sometimes you get these other concerns, like I mentioned, the wetted materials. And then you're balancing it with, hey, well, as a user of a Coriolis meter, what's my priority? Do I really need the utmost performance? Is this a point of sale, for example? Or do I need to be super precise and accurate with this measurement? If that's your driving factor, then you may want to use a smaller meter, right? So you're flowing a little bit faster through it, so you can get more accurate results when you're operating higher on that meter's curve. But when you've got a viscous meter, that's pushing you in, a viscous medium, that's pushing you in the opposite direction, where you're going to have a pressure drop. It sometimes can be very significant, especially at higher viscosities. That can really take the driver's seat in any of these, right? So that's the balancing act that you're dealing with, where, hey, I've only got 15 pounds of pressure that I'm pushing this stuff through the pipe with, and I can't accept a significant pressure loss. So you may look to a different tube design, right? Maybe you're looking for a single straight tube Coriolis meter, for example, that handles that really well just by way of its geometry. It has the lowest pressure loss. sometimes, not always, you may end up having to sacrifice something. You can't always have your cake and eat it too. Sometimes you may think, hey, I'm willing to sacrifice a bit of performance in order to make sure that I don't have a pressure loss that I can't accept in this application. And sometimes vice versa. I really need the utmost accuracy. I can live with the higher pressure loss. So there's all sorts of the basic stuff, you know, what's my performance, what's my pressure loss, all that stuff. But then, yeah, you get these other kind of more fit for use things, like, for example, the wet materials or the end connection size, or there's a whole litany of other factors that may select it. But it is a balancing act, and it's important as users that when you're dealing with manufacturers or your local rep or whoever you may be working with, that it's not just the application parameters that are important, but it's also your priorities as the user with, hey, what do I really need from this meter? And what can I maybe compromise on?
Talking about the mindfulness of the design and that it's a balancing act and there's a lot of things to consider. What about the simplicity of just the installation requirements for Coriolis meters? What are some of those considerations?
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a very good question, because sometimes that takes a driver's seat. I only have this much space. And different manufacturers, again, back to their different design choices and just designs that they have for Coriolis meters, you'll find some variety in installation recommendations. For the most part, they're pretty consistent across manufacturer, and the full recommendations can certainly be found in manuals and all that fun stuff. But generally, it distills down to kind of three buckets, right? You want to support the meter, because they, especially as they get larger, say 3-inch, 4-inch, and larger, right? Coriolis meters go up to 16 inches. They can get very, very large. So number one is you want to support the weight of the meter. The second bucket that these installation recommendations can fall into is you want to try and keep it full for best performance. And last but not least, you want to avoid cavitation. Generally, all of the recommendations will fall into those buckets. And so one of the great things about Coriolis meters, you mentioned installation requirements. Many times when you're dealing with velocity meters, the velocity type meters that I mentioned earlier, you have to deal with inlet and outlet straight runs, right? How much straight pipe do I need before and after the meter? Well, since Coriolis meters, they aren't measuring velocity. They can calculate a flow velocity, but it's not a direct measurement. They don't require any upstream or downstream straight runs. So in terms of installing them in short distances of pipe, they're fantastic for that, because they do not care. You can have 90 degree bends, valves, all sorts of other stuff, as long as you're not cavitating through the meter for best performance. You're not restricted by that, which is great. And in terms of mounting orientation, vertical flow up, if you're dealing with a liquid, vertical flow up, nobody's ever going to be upset about that. And it makes sure that the tubes stay full. If you're dealing with bent tube meters, something that is not always taken into consideration, generally, the majority of Coriolis meters have bent tubes. And if you're using them for liquids, you want those tubes, if you're installing it in a horizontal, you want those tubes, or the belly of that meter, if you will, to be down, right, to be below the pipe. Now, if you're using them for gas applications, you'd actually want the opposite. You'd want that belly upwards. And the reason for that is if we have a liquid application and there's any gas, we want that gas to propagate out of the meter. And the opposite is true for liquids, or excuse me, for a gas application. If you have any liquids that may find their way into the meter, we want those to propagate out from the meter so that they don't pool up and ultimately impact measurement integrity and cause some issues. So they are quite loose in the grand scheme of the requirements, that is, in the grand scheme of flow meters, that, you know, hey, we don't need any inlet or outlet runs. If you can keep it full, support the weight, and avoid cavitation, you're good. No other real considerations.
What about maintenance and making sure that you have the continued accuracy and functionality? You talked about a few things, but are there other things that folks can implement to keep things moving smoothly?
Yes, certainly. So one of the great things about Coriolis meters is generally they're recognized as having no moving parts. There's no bearings, there's no spinning blades or rotating components that you may be subject to the mechanical wear. So they're not subject to long-term drift, kind of. There's a couple things that we do want to make sure of. And going back to some comments I made earlier, is that we do need to be conscious of some things when we're sizing and selecting a meter, because some things that will cause long-term drift in a Coriolis meter, in the performance of a Coriolis meter, to clarify, is adding mass to the system, right? So if you're dealing with something that we know builds up, or on the contrary to that, if you have anything that's taking mass away from the tubes, so that would be either corrosion or erosion. Now, generally, those are things that we try to mitigate when we're sizing and selecting the Coriolis meter, but they can still happen, right? There are some applications where, hey, we know this material is going to build up, and it's going to build up on everything. And so there's a bit of, going back to some of those back-end measurements, there's quite a bit that the meter can tell you if you're dealing with applications with buildup. If you're listening to the meter, it can tell you quite a lot. And it can actually help you diagnose when you need to start, when you need to flush, right, to optimize your cleaning regimen that you may have in place for your other components and applications where there's buildup. So that's a really useful, maybe not so hidden, but I don't think that everybody takes advantage of it, is that the meter can help you optimize your maintenance practices if you have applications where you're dealing with buildup. But another really low-hanging fruit method of ensuring continued accuracy is generally called, and different manufacturers have different solutions and names for it, but meter verification. Right? And so what I mean by that is you basically ask the meter, and it could be software, it could be hardware, it could be just a button on the display. There's a variety of ways of implementing this, but functionally they're all very similar. Is you ask the meter, are you still operating correctly? And it checks its own internal values, compares those against factory calibration values, and prints out a report that says, yes, I am. Or it, conversely, you don't want a verification solution that always tells you yes. If there is an issue, it will give you corrective actions. Hey, make sure you check this. Because there's such a variety of applications, there's a variety of things that it could alert you of. But what I do want to make a distinction of on that point of meter verification, because it's become very, very widely adopted, and for a very good reason. You're troubleshooting 101 is try the easiest thing first, right? So if you have a super easy way of checking the meter's integrity, let's start with that. Maybe it can point you in the right direction of other issues that may be present in the application or within the meter. But what verification isn't is calibration, right? And as manufacturers, we have some wildly advanced and highly accurate calibration facilities, calibration rigs, that we are calibrating these incredibly accurate meters against. So if you want to truly ensure meter performance, right, where the rubber hits the road, really a meter should be calibrated. And if you're going to calibrate anything, you have to calibrate it against something that's more accurate than it is by at least 3 times. So if you've got a meter that's 1%, you want to calibrate it against something that's probably 0.25% or better, something along those lines. And so Krona, we have calibration facilities. So, but unfortunately what that does require is a meter to be removed from service and either put on a mobile calibration rig or sent back to a factory calibration rig so that it can be compared against something suitably accurate. Generally that fact right there, the fact you have to remove it is not the most appealing. Hey, I need this. Otherwise I wouldn't have it. I need this for my process. I can't just take it out of line and send it off for a week or remove it from line at all unless I'm in a shutdown. So there are some common maintenance practices, I would say, yeah, just monitoring if you have the ability to some of those back-end measurements and performing periodic meter verification just to ensure that your meter's as accurate is really about all you need to do, because these meters are so robust.
They are robust, and they are also one of the most expensive flow metering technologies out there. So what are some of the limitations or disadvantages of Coriolis meters, and are there conditions where they may not be suitable for a particular application?
Certainly. A very good question. And one of the things that you do have to, and I alluded to it a little bit earlier when I was talking about that balancing act that you're dealing with in sizing, is that in the grand scheme of flow measurement, Coriolis meters do introduce a larger pressure loss than many other flow technologies. So if that's, for example, we see a good example of that, it would be like liquefied gases, right? Where they're being held under low pressures and higher low temperatures and higher pressures, in order to make sure that they stay liquid, right? So if you're introducing a pressure loss, you can get flashing, and that's no good. So sometimes things like that in an application may steer you away from a meter that introduces significant pressure loss. Not super common. Generally, the pressure loss is manageable, but there are times where that really does push you in a different direction. And as manufacturers of flow solutions, really, right, we have a variety of different flow measuring options within our portfolio. That's one of those things that may push us in a different direction. Another range of applications that really just don't, this just doesn't always make the most sense to use a Coriolis meter, because as you mentioned, they are expensive, is if you're dealing with a low pressure gas. It's tough to put a number on exactly what low pressure is, a relative term, depending on who you're speaking with. But if you're dealing with a lower pressure gas, because these meters are mass flow meters, low pressure gases with their low densities, you really just don't get all that much mass flow. So the meters can measure it, but now really what you're looking at is you may be dealing with not the level of performance that you're looking for, the level of accuracy that you're looking for from this meter. And you may not get the right application turned down. You know, hey, I want to measure over this range of flow rates, and the Coriolis meter doesn't offer the best performance over my entire flow range, and it is expensive, and there are other flow technologies, for example, a gas ultrasonic meter in line, no pressure loss, great accuracy, great turndown. Other things like a vortex meter, there's thermal mass, there's a variety of other options there where you may get more bang for your buck. A gas we see more and more of and is especially tricky because it is so light is hydrogen. If you've got hydrogen at, again, low pressure is a bit relative, but even if you have hydrogen at a few hundred pounds of pressure, it's still just very, very light. So you don't get all that much mass flow. So not to say the Coriolis meters can't measure hydrogen, definitely not the case. But when you're sizing them up and selecting them, maybe not always the most compelling performance curve that you're looking at for these applications. And just the one last point is sometimes, especially as meters get larger, they don't require any inlet or outlet runs, but their overall footprint or installation envelope can get quite large. And sometimes, hey, if you're trying to retrofit something, or you're in tight spaces, or you're on a skid or something like that, you may not have the physical space to accommodate the belly that most Coriolis meters have. Not all. There are straight tube Coriolis meters that have a smaller overall installation envelope, but that overall installation footprint is also some kind of a maybe lesser known or not always taken into account aspect of selecting a Coriolis meter that may push you in a different direction.
Now, with all of the thought leadership that you've just imparted on us, that is one aspect of this, but I want to get to the question of what does Krona have that sets their technologies and meters apart? Obviously, you have this great vast knowledge of what end users need, but what is it particularly about Krona technology that makes it different?
A couple things that Krona has within our portfolio. Our portfolio, if you're like me and you're a Coriolis meter nerd and you're familiar with the market in a broader sense, you may notice our portfolio looks a little bit different just at a, you know, super high level. And the main reason to that is straight tube. Krona was the very first manufacturer to figure out how to make a straight tube meter. There's some advantages that come along with that. And we've iterated upon that over the last almost 30 years now. So we have a variety of straight tube meters that, as I mentioned, I alluded to it a couple times. If you're dealing with something that's very viscous or slurry applications, for example, straight tube is a fantastic option for that. It also just has a low pressure loss thanks to its tube geometry, you know, forcing the fluid through any bends. So we have a variety of straight tube options. They also don't have a belly. So we have single straight tube. We have multi-straight tube. We can make them from a quarter of an inch all the way up to 16 inches, which is the highest capacity Coriolis meter that exists in the market today. So just from a broad sense, our portfolio maybe looks a bit different. Bent tube is fantastic. We make a great bent tube as well. And sometimes it is the best option for sure. There's not a one size fits all in Coriolis design preference, all that kind of stuff. We also have a solution that we call Entrained Gas Management. We've actually had it for about a decade now, and it's a standard feature on all of our meters, whether they're straight tube, quarter inch, or bent tube, 10 inch, or whatever you like. It's a standard feature on all of our meters, and what it does is it allows the meter to continue to measure with live, repeatable measurements through even the most severe multi-phase applications. So it's, you can kind of think of it like a seatbelt in your car or all-wheel drive in your car, which is a great analogy for me because growing up in the North, it only takes one near-death experience in a little two-wheel drive sedan to realize, nope, I need all-wheel drive. And you can think of EGM like that for your Coriolis meter because the diagnostics will tell you that you're seeing two-phase flow. It will continue to measure on mass flow and on density. It'll tell you that the integrity of your measurement is affected, and it's always there running in the background. It's not an additional cost to add, or you don't need to set it up. You don't need to do anything. It's just always there running in the background. So we've had a lot of success solving tough applications with that. And last but not least, a more recent addition to our transmitter, our flow transmitter, is Bluetooth functionality, which is a massive improvement in user interface. Right? I mean, instead of pushing buttons or dealing with the handhelds and modems and computer software, now it's a service tool or I don't know about you. I always carry one around, right? I can connect to a flow meter with my phone, get full functionality of the transmitter. I can configure it. I can commission it. I can perform a meter verification just right from my phone or my tablet that your instrument shop may already have for other instrumentation. So I can commission it. I can monitor it. I can check the diagnostics. I can do meter verification. It is a really fantastic improvement in user interface with our Coriolis meters.
Well, Alec, I want to thank you for your thoughtful answers, for helping us to listen to the meter and understand how to balance the needs to get the best outcomes and best performance, and also for participating in our Solution Spotlight edition of Chemical Processing's Distilled podcast. For our listeners, you can subscribe to this free podcast via your favorite platform. You can also visit chemicalprocessing.com for more tools and resources aimed at helping you achieve success. On behalf of Alec, the self-proclaimed Coriolis meter nerd, and our sponsor, Krona, thanks for tuning in. Thanks again, Alec.
Thanks so much for having me, Tracy. This was fun.